Welcome to Asia Calling, your window on Asia. Coming up on the show this week, an exclusive interview with Indonesian President Joko Widodo. With ISIS militants at war on Indonesia's doorstep in the Philippines, we ask how the tide of radicalism is being stemmed in Indonesia, and at what cost. We also speak to women internet activists, and we explore why Australia is boycotting treaty negotiations that would ban nuclear weapons. Thanks for tuning into the show. I'm Nicole Kirby. With militia engaged in a drawn-out attack in the Philippines, the spectre of an ISIS front in Asia is mounting. Just a stone's throw away from the fighting in Mindanao lies Indonesia, a nation of 250 million struggling with the threat of rising radicalism. Some Indonesians have travelled to join the militants fighting in the Philippines. Meanwhile, Indonesia's capital Jakarta was struck by a suicide bomb attack claimed by ISIS, just as a conflict in Marawi was beginning. KBR's chief editor, Chitra Dia Prastuti, has this exclusive interview with President Joko Widodo on Indonesia's response to radicalism. Chitra started by asking the president what steps the government is taking to avoid a situation like that in Marawi, the Philippines.
Yeah. Yang penting, menurut saya, kita jangan sampai takut.
I think the most important thing is we should not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Because if we are afraid, it means that terrorism has won. Like it or not, we must prepare a serious agenda to fight terrorism. And I have ordered the police chief to tackle them at their roots. But in my opinion, the most important thing is that the terrorism bill should be completed soon, because it will provide the legal foundation that, when implemented, will allow the security apparatus to move more easily.
In January 2016, a terrorist attack in Jakarta killed four people, plus the militants involved. Following the attack, President Jokowi quickly moved to reform the country's 2003 terrorism law, introducing measures aimed at preempting attacks.
Sekarang kan aparat kita enggak bisa bergerak karena apa?
Now, why can't our security agencies move? Because we cannot take actions before something actually happens. We cannot take actions when they have plans. It means that we can't take any actions until after an incident occurs, right? That's very funny. So that's why this terrorism bill addresses de-radicalization and prevention. It means prevention is the most important point.
The president's proposed changes to the terrorism law would broaden the definition of terrorism and give the military a more active role in addressing terrorism. The president's preventative measures would allow suspects to be detained for up to 2 months without trial. Suspected terrorists could also be stripped of their Indonesian citizenship.
I think if we have a clear legal protection, the security apparatus will be easier, more solid, and stronger, and they will not hesitate in acting in the field. I think that's important here, because in other countries, anti-terrorism laws are much stronger, allowing the security apparatus to freely carry out its work.
The president's message has drawn criticism from civil society and human rights groups, who have fought hard for democratic freedoms over the past 18 years. Since the fall of the Suharto dictatorship, civil society groups have pushed to reduce the role of the military and are resisting a fresh encroachment into civil life. I spoke with Adi Manto Ariputra of the Indonesian human rights monitor Impartial, who gave us another side to the story. How would you respond to Pak Jokowi's comments regarding the terrorism bill?
First of all, the process of amendment, the law on terrorism, is there already in the process in the parliament. The government also in the parliament wants increasing the power of the law enforcement and also involving the military in countering terrorism in Indonesia. We think in the draft that still so many potential abuses of human rights. and also in involving the military, the chance for the violations of human rights in the future, it will be bigger than before. Today that the anti-terrorism still handled by the police, but in the future when the military involved with the less safeguards of human rights, so the violation of human rights will be bigger and will be dangerous.
Adi is concerned that increased military power and the ability to arrest and detain suspects without trial would be applied to activists, particularly Papuan independence activists.
But actually, in these last 5 years, the police action in handling terrorism, they can actually stop the action of terrorism. So then they don't need the terrorism act, so they can make the preemptive and preventive action based on the existing law.
In what way do you think human rights will be encroached upon by this terrorism bill?
The first is to make clear in this draft of law the rights of perpetrators and the mechanism of involving of the military, and also the scale, grades of threat in the terrorism. Of course, when the situation like in Marawi, for example, in the Philippines, the military will involve. It's automatically because it's there in based on the military law number 34, 2004. But when the situation is still, can be handled by the police, so the military should not be involved at all. Include in the area of preemptive and also in the area of preventive.
You've been listening to Ari Manto Ariputra from Imparcial and President Joko Widodo. For Asia Calling, this report is from KBR Radio. North Korea has launched 16 nuclear missiles this year. Despite President Trump's promise to find a solution to tensions between the US and North Korea, no progress has been made. The threat of nuclear weapons now seems more real than ever. Amidst the tensions, though, some countries are pushing for a treaty that would completely ban nuclear weapons. Talks are currently underway at the UN headquarters in New York. But there are some very noticeable absences at the negotiating table. From Sydney, Jake Atienza explores why Australia has boycotted the treaty talks.
It's a sunny winter morning. A crowd, mostly women, is standing in a broken circle outside the office of Australia's Defence Minister, Maurice Payne. They hold a large red banner with a clear message: ban nuclear weapons.
So the bomb went off in the morning and reached the sandhills by mid-morning. The black mist rolled through the Mulga, eerily, silently.
The crowd listens intently as Aboriginal elder Rosemary Lester describes how the horrors of nuclear weapons impacted her family.
My dad lost one eye instantly when the fallout hit, and then 5 years later went permanently blind.
In the 1950s, Australia and Britain secretly carried out nuclear weapons tests at desert sites, Murrilinga and Emu Field. Nuclear bombs were detonated, and as the military measured their power, Aboriginal people living nearby suffered the monstrous effects.
Scientists got the wind variations wrong, and when they detonated on that morning, the wind tunnel blew the fallout 120 kilometres across the desert and hit the homeland mid-morning.
Many were forced to leave their homes, suffered illness, and some died from the impacts. It's the reason why Rosemary and her father, Yami, have dedicated their lives to fighting against nuclear weapons.
Run the ball! Run the ball! Run the ball! Run the ball! Run the ball!
Now, as the United Nations leads treaty negotiations for a ban on nuclear weapons, Rosemary and other anti-nuclear activists are out in force.
Nuclear weapons threaten us every day, whether they're used or not, just by existing.
That's Gemma Ramold from the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, or ICAN.
There are about 15,000 nuclear weapons that still exist in the world, held between nine countries. 95% of those are between the US and Russia. And nuclear war has suddenly hit mainstream consciousness again with the election of Donald Trump. It feels more possible, and it just increases the urgency with which we need to get rid of the weapons.
If successful, the United Nations treaty would stop production and testing of nuclear weapons. It also promises to assist people affected by nuclear weapons.
And at the moment, Australia is rejecting the process completely, and they don't want to see nuclear weapons banned. But we need to have a huge public effort to turn that around.
120 countries are participating in treaty negotiations, but almost 40 countries are boycotting the talks. In fact, all the countries that hold nuclear weapons are refusing to be part of the talks. They argue that with tensions mounting between North Korea and the U.S., a ban is unattainable and naive. But Rosemary Lester says it's about money.
Well, I think it says that the government have some financial interest in the nuclear industry, and that they are all part of the system.
Australia is one of the world's largest exporters of uranium, which the government values at almost 10 million Australian dollars per year. That uranium should only be used to generate power, not to make nuclear weapons. But the fact remains that Australia exports most of its uranium to nuclear-armed states, including India, the US, France, and South Korea.
Beings, and I remember people dying in the Royal Adelaide Hospital of thyroid cancer, but no one ever asked any questions about it.
That's Dr. Helen Caldicott, a physician, author, and anti-nuclear activist. She says Australia decided to opt out of the treaty negotiations because nuclear weapons are strategically important to the country's foreign policy.
In fact, Pine Gap, in the middle of Australia, near Alice Springs, will orchestrate the nuclear war.
Pine Gap, an Australian intelligence center, jointly operated by the U.S., collects data for the U.S. government. Dr. Caldicott says the operations at Pine Gap underline Australia's close relationship, even dependency, on the United States.
Unless America decides to do something about the nuclear arms race, nothing will happen.
Most countries in Southeast Asia and the South Pacific support a treaty banning nuclear weapons. Flying in the face of regional trends, Australia is aligning itself with states that favor nuclear armament. Greens Party Senator Lee Rhiannon says the Australian government is making a grave mistake.
You should be putting your hand out to your neighbours, working with them to increase peaceful relations. There are differences between nations, but we should also always be working to negotiate with them in a peaceful way, not to ramp up the threats to other countries in the area.
Treaty negotiations will continue until July 7 at the UN headquarters in New York.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind.
For Asia Calling, I'm Jake Atienza in Sydney, Australia.
You're listening to Asia Calling KBR. Have you ever thought about whether access to the internet should be a human right? Online media has changed so quickly in recent years that government and regulatory bodies are struggling to find ways to catch up. Rick Wasserman recently met internet activists at the Stockholm Internet Forum, where the big questions, from fake news to online government repression, were on the agenda.
Mentioned Clinton and Trump, or even the French election, and before long, the conversation inevitably turns to fake news. Many of us are worried by the rise of fake news and the way online rumors are having massive impacts in the real world. But for journalist Maria Salam, the danger is immediate. fake news is having violent and life-threatening impacts in her home country, Bangladesh.
A number of houses and temples of Hindu community peoples were vandalized in five villages in central Bangladesh over a fake Facebook post.
Five temples lie in ruins. Hundreds of people fled, running for their lives.
Later, it was found that actually the account was created by using the name and photograph of a person who actually doesn't know even how to operate Facebook.
Social media isn't regulated like traditional media. Quality and accuracy checks just don't exist. And it's both a downfall and a strength. On the one hand, fake information is proliferating. On the other hand, journalists and activists are finding new ways to mobilize. Maria Reza is CNN's former Jakarta bureau chief. But in 2012, she left CNN to start the online news site Rappler.
I was tired of throwing stories into a black hole. I mean, you'd do a certain number of stories, you'd see it, but then if you work for CNN, very rarely do you see that have immediate impact in your culture, in your society.
Maria aimed to set up an online forum where professional journalists, citizen journalists, and ordinary people could take part in meaningful conversations.
When we set up Rappler, the whole idea was to try to figure out how this new technology can help journalists actually create communities of action that would have real-world impact.
Even though Maria loves the possibilities for open debate and the absence of gatekeepers on the internet, she's also faced its dark side.
When they say something on social media, they're virulently, violently attacked. And it's not I disagree with you, Maria. It is, you should be killed, you should be raped. The attacks are virulent, and they're meant to silence.
Effectively censoring content on the internet is a mammoth and unwieldy task. In Malaysia, as the government sees its powers of censorship whittle away, they are trying to crack down. Several news sites were closed down last year after they reported on corruption. Bloggers and anti-government dissidents are also harassed. Malaysian writer and activist Jack Sim Key says a pitched battle is being waged over freedom of expression online.
There's been numerous attempts to basically change the Communications and Multimedia Act to make it more and more punitive, I think, in terms of what people do online.
The act, which criminalizes communication that could be considered offensive or cause annoyance, is broad and open to subjective interpretation, allowing it to be used as a political weapon. Don't gripe, organize, says Jack Sim Key. Along with her team, she's developed the feminist principles of the internet. Its goal, to employ technology towards ending discrimination.
We need a people's charter on internet rights and freedoms. We can't sit here and just react to whatever the government says the internet should or should not be.
Jack and her team are challenging cultures of sexism and working towards unrestricted internet access for women and queer people. There's still plenty of doubt around where the internet will take us in the future. Should there be order or anarchy? Who should decide? Individuals or governments? Maria Reza again.
A new order needs to be established. Who's in control of establishing that order? I don't believe it's legislation. We fight battles for our communities. So that trust needs to get rebuilt. How are we going to do that?
The Stockholm Internet Forum did reach consensus on one issue. Access to the internet should be enshrined as a human right. That means no one would be left offline because they are unable to pay. From Sweden, this is Rick Wasserman for Asia Calling.
The Philippines is the only country in the Asia-Pacific region where the rate of teen pregnancies has risen during the last two decades. That's according to the United Nations Population Fund. In a country where the influential Catholic Church has strongly opposed the use of contraception and where abortion is illegal, one in 10 young women aged between 15 and 19 are mothers. Madonna Varola has this report from the city of Calapan.
I meet 14-year-old Sharon at the Open High School. She attends once a week with other young people in challenging circumstances. Today, her daughter is in the care of her aunt so she can attend this class on science. Like many young women in the Philippines, Sharon was totally unprepared to be a mother. She was not even entirely clear about the basics of contraception.
Ano po, kababata ko po kasi siya eh. Bata pa kami, magkakasama kami.
I didn't know that with one act I would be pregnant. I only found out 4 months later. The father was my childhood friend who became my boyfriend, but he didn't accept the baby and stopped supporting me. He wanted the baby boy. We still live in the same village, but he goes to school while I stay at home and care for the baby and clean the house. People make fun of me for being a young mother.
Teresita Bolor is a doctor at the local government office in Calapan and has seen women as young as 11 years old fall pregnant. Teen pregnancy, she says, can have serious health implications. There is a higher risk of high blood pressure or hypertension, which can affect the growth of the unborn baby and even lead to premature birth. Across the country, there just are not enough services for young people to address the issues around teen pregnancy, says Dr. Bolor.
Inadequate provision of quality health services by health facilities to address the needs of adolescent and teenage groups. There should be an adolescent-friendly clinic established in a rural health unit. A youth-friendly facilities may be not a priority program, and there is lack of coordination of stakeholders.
In the Philippines, attitudes toward contraception and family planning are heavily influenced by the Catholic Church, which is strongly against contraception. Abortion is also illegal here, even though there are still around 500,000 abortions each year, say health activists. But some progressive voices are starting to emerge from within the church. Here's Odi Quino from the Apostolic Vicariate of Calapan, explaining what gets taught in lectures at his church.
In the church, we recognize the issue of rising teenage pregnancies, many of which are still not reported because of the stigma that goes within it. We teach sexuality such that we scientifically label the body parts, unlike many others, to treat this as taboo, which still marks Philippine culture. And this idea is supported by the new pastoral apostolic exhortation of Pope Francis. And he stated, we have also to realize that a new and more appropriate language is needed.
Sex education is starting to be taught more widely in some schools, but many young people still lack basic knowledge. At the same time, the number of sexually active teens is on the rise. According to Plan International, 1 in 3 young people aged between 15 and 24 are sexually active, compared to 23% a decade ago. I spoke to Badin Verora from Plan on the phone from Manila.
Okay, on teenage pregnancy, it is most worrying trend that 78% of young people who are sexually active are not engaging in safe sex.
Child rights advocate Nanette Makagiwa agrees. She says the lack of sex education is a huge issue.
Our responsibility is to educate the learners and the parents. We will not stop our advocacy as regards child protection. That's the first thing. And then we make sure that this policy is localized in the schools, that there is a functional child protection committee. The sectarian schools should not discriminate our young girls and boys who have found to be engaged in sexual activities.
Health professionals and activists are urging the government to implement sex education across the board in the national curriculum and provide better access to health services for young people. Frasia Colling, This is Madonna Virola, reporting in the city of Calapan.
That's all for this edition of Asia Calling. Our program today was produced in the studios of Radio KBR in Jakarta, Indonesia. To find out more about the show, send us a message on our Asia Calling Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Asia Calling for more updates. You can now also podcast the show. Go to the iTunes Store or your podcasting app and search for Asia Calling and subscribe for free to the weekly episodes. I'm Nicole Kirby, back next week with more stories from Asia.
Oh, 此刻承受的也超负荷。